This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, July 22nd, 2021. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home in New York and producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. Taylor, I know baseball wasn't necessarily your first love as a kid the way it was for me. Are you familiar with the phrase Wally Pipped?
I've heard of it. I'm not super aware of what that means. I might have an idea, but please explain.
Okay, so back in the 1920s, the Yankees' first baseman was a guy named Wally Pipp, okay? And then one day he got a day off, and the Yankees played another first baseman, a young up-and-comer named Lou Gehrig. He didn't miss a game for years and years and years after that. So Wally Pipp was replaced, and he never got back. And I just mentioned this because the last 2 days, Nathan Garcia, great job filling in for you.
Wow. Yeah. Great job indeed. I don't know if he did that great of a job to permanently supplant me, but, we can still give our guy Nathan props. Mr. Malibu coming up big while I was out, and he gets to do it again next week. So I know he had a great time, and you were so gracious to make him feel comfortable on the show.
No, he was terrific. And all kidding aside, yeah, he did a great job. As you do too. So anyway, yeah, Wally Pipped. You can keep that in mind now as you move forward, and you can apply it to somebody else if you see them, miss a day and someone steps in and does a nice job. So a moving day in the National League East on Wednesday. Marcus Stroman dominated for the Mets, and they shut out the Reds 7-0. The Braves lost the first game of a doubleheader to the Padres, and the second game was suspended with Atlanta losing by a run. The Nationals lost to the Marlins. And the Phillies had a wrenching game. They were down by 3 runs in the 8th inning, tied the score, and then in the bottom of the 10th, this happened.
Infield in. Lamar at the plate, pinch hitting for Gardner. This should get it done. Deep fly ball, right field. Miller back, turns, looks, and it is a walk-off single for Ryan Lamar, and the Yankees win 6-5.
That was Michael Kay on the YES Network. Yeah, the B-Bombers win again. That's 4 straight wins with this lineup of misfit toys, Taylor. How about the Yankees, these fill-ins? They're getting it done.
I love it. I love that they're kind of piecing together. Maybe it'll be good for their overall team chemistry in the back half of the season here. They got 7 games coming up, 4 against Boston on the road, 3 against Tampa Bay, and then the schedule lightens up a little bit. So maybe they go a game above 500 in those 7 games, and then they can kind of try and feast on the Marlins, the O's, the Mariners, and the Royals. So they're in a good spot right now.
Yeah, I wondered if you gave truth serum to the key decision makers in the Yankees organization, if they would acknowledge that, yeah, when Aaron Judge went out and they're facing the Red Sox and the Red Sox are rolling going into Saturday, if they thought they were in trouble. But 4 straight wins for them. Meanwhile, in the National League East, the Phillies are now 3.5 games behind the Mets, the Braves 4.5 back, the Nationals now 6 back. The Mets yesterday traded outfielder Billy McKinney to Los Angeles Dodgers for a minor leaguer in cash. Billy McKinney, in 39 games with the Mets, he batted .220, 6 doubles, a triple, and 5 home runs, 14 RBI. I got to say, he's one of those guys, if the Mets wind up making the playoffs, you look back at their season, I think we'll realize that he was better than those numbers indicated. He really helped them get through a difficult time. Speaking of breakups, Chicago White Sox rookie Yermín Mercedes wrote in an Instagram post on Wednesday night, he is stepping aside, quote unquote, from baseball indefinitely, while also apologizing to the team for, quote unquote, not accepting some of their decisions. The post was accompanied with a picture of the words, "It's over." I saw on Twitter overnight that Pedro Martinez, a Hall of Fame pitcher, was basically encouraging Yermín Mercedes, look, just be patient, wait for some other team to step up and want you. The Tigers seem to win just about every day these days. They faced the Rangers yesterday. Broke a tie in the bottom of the 2nd.
Swinging a fly ball, left field, down the line. Hooking, will it stay fair? Gone! Number 4 for Zach Short. 2-run shot. Tigers back on top in the 2nd, 3-1.
Dan Dickerson, 97.1 the ticket. The Tigers will go on to win that game 4-2. They've got 6 straight wins, and they play the Kansas City Royals this weekend. We're going to be talking coming up with Sarah Langs about whether or not A.J. Hinch should be considered for American League Manager of the Year. Late last night, the Dodgers had another chance to beat the Giants. They led San Francisco 2-1. Then in the top of the ninth inning, Kenley Jansen came on.
1-1, Flores hits a high drive, left field. This one is gone. And the Giants have gone ahead in the ninth inning. His first career hit against Kenley Jansen was a bomb, a two-run homer. 3-2 Giants here in the ninth.
Yeah, Wilmer Flores has done a lot of his damage in career in his career against left-handed pitching. Kenley Jansen, a right-hander, but he gets his first career hit off Jansen. Another run scored for the Giants. They would go on to win 4-2. And when Kenley Jansen was relieved on the mound by Dave Roberts, his manager, he was booed walking back to the dugout. Dave Roberts had some really serious thoughts about that after the game. Now, before we get to Sarah Langs and Len Casper, who does the White Sox games on radio, I want to tell you about 30 for 30's latest, Breakaway, a film about WNBA superstar and activist Maya Moore. This film explores the story of Moore, one of the best basketball players in the world, stepping away from the sport for a remarkable reason, to fight for a man she believed was wrongly imprisoned. Stream Breakaway now, only on ESPN+.
And Buster, if you like 30 for 30s, we have basically the podcast equivalent of a 30 for 30. I know Nathan promoted the other day, but on the Woj Pod, they did a three-part special last fall on the two-time MVP and now NBA champion Giannis Antetokounmpo. He went from a Greek teen of Nigerian descent hawking trinkets in the streets of Athens, and now he's a champion. Check it out, the Woj Pod Giannis Draft Special. Just dial back through your feed wherever you get your podcasts.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11 ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com and international star. Sarah, you know, you were on the podcast on Tuesday, and every day, come on. Right, exactly. Every day that you come on, you know, you and I exchange emails. What are we going to talk about today? We played the numbers game the other day, and at no point did you mention about the broadcast that you were going to be the analyst on the broadcast. And I don't know if that had been out there widely beforehand, but then later that day, it's like Sarah Lang's going to be the analyst, the first broadcast all involving all women. And then in the 36 hours that follow, you're one of the biggest stars of the planet. Yesterday, you're on the Today Show. My God. I mean, you're in the business of television. Sell yourself. Tell me that on Tuesday. Come on.
I am so sorry. I am the worst in the world at self-promotion. My father found out about that broadcast in a story that went up online, and actually Mandy Bell had a pretty funny tweet pointing this concept out last night because I did not mention to her about the Today Show or any of that either. And she found out on Twitter hours later, and she's like, we've been texting all day. So I just want to be clear that this is not me keeping Buster out of the loop or anything. I do not really keep anyone in the loop because I don't ever want to talk about myself. But thank you so much. I mean, the broadcast was so much fun. The Today Show was certainly not something I ever thought I would be doing in my life. So that was a really, really cool experience. But
so your dad found out about you doing the broadcast after I did?
There was an article that went up to promote it last week, and I woke up one morning and he had emailed me the link.
And was he like, what's this about? Congratulations sort of thing?
No, he was very excited, but I did mean to mention it before that story went up.
Very nice. Well, you know, I apologize for missing that story that last week, but then it just exploded like an hour after I talked with you all over the place. And so tell me, was that fun doing that broadcast?
Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. I mean, Melanie Newman is just such a consummate professional. She is so, so good at her job. And it was, I mean, one of the coolest things about doing that broadcast was seeing her do her job up close. I had so much fun talking with her. Alana Rizzo, of course, outstanding. Lauren Gardner, Heidi Watney were on the pregame show with us, and they handled the pregame show. They were awesome. But it was really cool. And I have to say, when MLB Network reached out to me to do the game, I've done a couple other games, and I was excited to do another game. I didn't quite understand initially the gravity of the situation, what we were going to be doing, and where all of those storylines were going to be going in terms of the historic moment. So it was really, really cool to see how excited people were about that part as well.
So I saw pictures of little girls holding up signs, basically celebrating all of you. And your name, of course, was on those signs. What was that like?
Oh my gosh. So there was this tweet that the Orioles had with that picture. And I got home after the game and I was catching up on Twitter, because, you know, when you're doing these games, you're not as locked into that as you might be when you're keeping track of games on a normal nightly basis. And I saw that, I just almost started crying. I mean, it was really, really cool to be part of such a moment. It, you know, a really cool first, but I'm excited for the fact that it won't be the last for sure. But I just couldn't really process even that picture and the fact that there is that little girl there with that sign. And there was actually a pretty cool moment because we had some players mic'd up. It was a YouTube game of the week. So they always mic up a player from each side. And there was this conversation between Anthony Santander and Kelvin Gutierrez in the Orioles dugout, where they were aware of the fact that this was the first all-women broadcast. And Anthony Santander says in Spanish, like, well, all the women are smarter than us anyway. That went pretty viral. So that was pretty funny to see as well.
How much did your mom enjoy seeing you on the Today Show?
Oh my gosh, she loved it. I mean, again, I don't mean for this to come off wrong, and I hope it doesn't, but calling games, getting a chance to talk about sports, talk about baseball with you, you know, twice a week, as we've been doing here for a bunch of years. I think somewhere in the back of my mind, I hope that these things were always possible. Things like going on those news shows were never even anywhere in my mind. So pretty cool to get those things that I wasn't really even thinking about and have those things happen. Cool to be in a different TV studio. You and I know we're familiar with the SportsCenter set, MLB Network, whatever else, but always fun to see how another place functions. So I enjoyed that part too.
Well, congratulations. Well deserved.
Thank
it was
you.
Fun to watch from afar. That's for sure. All right, let's talk some baseball. Dave Roberts last night watched Kenley Jansen blow a lead, and he heard Dodger fans boo Kenley Jansen as he walked off the mound. Give a listen to Dave Roberts after the Dodgers game last night.
This guy is a lifelong Dodger, and I think to start is the fans certainly have a right to, you know, voice their frustrations, and absolutely. I get that. But I do believe that this guy, born and raised as a Dodger, you know, and what he does, he cares about the Dodgers, the fan base, and he's shown that on the field, off the field. And no one hurts more than he does, to be quite honest. And he's worked really hard to kind of get back, and should have been an all-star this year. And he's had a fantastic season. So there was a hiccup the other night, and to have one at home, he was looking forward to pitching at home. And so for it to not go well, I think that, I'm disappointed to hear that, certainly. He's not going to say it, but I am, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know how you felt. I love this defense by Dave Roberts of his closer. When you think about Kenley Jansen this year, in recent years, it feels like at the end of each season, we've had this debate about whether or not he should continue his closer because his performance has eroded. He's been a lot better this year. He didn't allow a single run in the month of June. He didn't allow a run in his July appearances leading up to the All-Star break. He has blown saves in his last two outings, but he's been really good this year.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, this is probably the best he's looked since maybe 2017. And that was kind of the moment where there were so many notes of what he did 2016, 17 compared to since in terms of home runs allowed, everything else. And this year has really looked a lot more like that 17 season and previously. So I like that. I mean, we don't always hear a manager taking that stance and defending his player in that way while also, you know, towing the line between you don't want to upset the fans, of course, but I really do agree with him there. I understand we've all been the fans sitting there, especially, you know, blown saves are not the easiest thing to take when you're sitting there as a fan in the stands, especially against the biggest division rival, this game against the Giants, you know, a lot of tensions there, but I do hope that Dodgers fans can take a step back. I mean, he's been a Dodger for 12 years, you know, and he's just such an important part of this, just the identity of this team. I mean, all of the storylines last year about Clayton Kershaw finally winning, Kenley Jansen was the second longest tenured Dodger. So he's been there almost as long. He debuted in 2010. So I like that Dave Roberts took the moment to say this. And again, to your point, the numbers actually back up. He has been significantly better this year than in recent years.
Yeah. You know, it made me think about those moments a few times when there were scatterings of boos for Mariano Rivera. And they seemed to happen because, as you know, he would go to spring training not having thrown a ball during the offseason. He was such a phenomenal athlete that he would be able to recover his fastball back, and he wanted his body to rest during the course of the wintertime. So he'd start throwing when he got back to spring training. He'd start throwing off the mound. And in April, his fastball velocity would be down, and he would blow a save or two, you know, relatively early in the season. But I remember feeling just the sound of him being booed in Yankee Stadium was jarring. Like, and that's the way that, you know, I'm sure for Dave Roberts to see Kenley Jansen booed in Dodger Stadium when they've seen Kenley be so good this year, that just has to be jarring. So tell me about your read on the Giants and Dodgers at this point.
You know, this division has been so fascinating, and I'm so glad we got a really exciting three-team race. We weren't expecting this, and I think a lot of people are picking the NL East to maybe be one of the most competitive divisions, and instead it's like a race to 85 wins. So I'm so glad we're getting this here. I do still feel like the Dodgers will ultimately win the division. I think it'll be close, and I do at this point feel like the Dodgers and Giants are a little bit separated from the Padres just because of some of the issues that the Padres have run into and the fact that they haven't quite made up that ground in the same way. And I know the Giants are right there, but I do think that the Dodgers ultimately, we've been talking about all of this talent. We know how good they are, and Cody Bellinger still hasn't gotten going yet. Mookie Betts, I know he's missed the last couple of games, but hopefully he does get healthy soon, and he's still not Mookie Betts with capital letters quite yet. I do think that those things will happen, Bellinger getting hot, Mookie getting hot, so on and so forth, and that will propel them. But, I mean, the Giants, after the loss that they had two nights ago with the Will Smith walk-off home run, everything else, to come back and have the late inning comeback the way they did against Kenley Jansen, that does show that this is a team that's going to hang in there.
We got this great tweet from a Tigers fan. I think, you know, I'm assuming Weston Prince is a Tigers fan. He's at Weston Prince too. He asked the question, the Tigers were 8-24 in April. Since May 8th, they are 37-27, 10 games over 500. He asked, does AJ Hinch have a chance at AL Manager of the Year? And it's really funny, Sarah, when you look at the AL Manager of the Year conversation, I think it involves four people. One, sort of the natural narrative about Tony La Russa returning to managing for the first time in a decade at the helm of the Chicago White Sox. They're in first place, so you know he's going to get consideration. But also, AJ Hinch, I think, absolutely is in that conversation. He's a terrific manager, you know, hired by the Tigers after his year-long suspension after the Astros sign-stealing scandal. And his primary competition may turn out to be Alex Cora, who is also coming back from a year-long suspension from that sign-stealing scandal, at the head of the Red Sox, who are leading the American League East. To me, they're the biggest surprise team in the American League. And I think you'd also have to talk about Dusty Baker, who replaced A.J. Hinch as manager of the Astros. The Astros are playing well. I think Dusty's done a terrific job for them. So what do you think? AL Manager of the Year.
I mean, I love it. I love this question. And I love bringing some attention to how good the Tigers have looked lately. I mean, they're 6-0 since the All-Star break. It's tied for the fifth best start after the break by any team that entered the All-Star break 10 or more games under 500. I know they're 10 or more games under 500. But I love this question because Manager of the Year is always the weirdest and most difficult award to predict of the main BBWA awards to me, because it's not really just about the team that was best. It really is about the biggest surprise, because it tends to be who defied expectations. And if they were to continue to play well, you know, we're not even expecting them to end up in a wild card. But if this team finishes a couple games above 500 or around there, I mean, I certainly see that argument. My take was going to be Alex Cora, just because I think the fact that they've been leading that division pretty much wire to wire at this point, and again, nobody saw this coming. No one was picking them to win the division. I was going to go with him, but everyone you mentioned is in a great spot. And it is really interesting how all of these teams and managers that we're mentioning, even with the Tigers being out of it, are very interconnected to what happened 2 years ago, what was going on last year with all their job titles, and where they are now.
Yeah, and Sarah, I'm really curious. Of course, the people who vote on the Manager of the Year award are the Baseball Writers Association. And we've seen in the Hall of Fame voting how they will give demerits for what they consider to be offenses. You know, the Barry Bonds, as I've talked about in the past, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, as far as Major League Baseball and the Hall of Fame are concerned, they're members in good standing. You know, they've had jobs in baseball. They were put on the ballot. But there are about a third of the writers who basically have indicated, I'm never voting for these guys because what they did was so horrific that I can't put them on that ballot. And I am curious about what the perspective is about Alex and about AJ, you know, who are, I don't think there's any question, you know, those two guys. I've said, I think Alex, the best manager in baseball, AJ's right behind him, along with Craig Counsell, with Kevin Cash, in my opinion. But I do wonder if there are going to be some baseball writers who just say, I'm not voting for those guys. What do you think?
I do wonder about that, and that's something I've sort of been thinking about in the back of my mind as the Red Sox got off to the start, especially, you know, you start thinking about, well, that feels like a slam dunk manager of the year, but you wonder about that. I have to imagine, though I have obviously no clue, that the fact that this is a season award as opposed to enshrinement in the Hall of Fame, which of course carries a lot more gravity, might affect that. And of course, as we both know, the voting is slightly different. It's two individuals per each chapter, and the breakdown of exactly who is voting is a little bit different. So I do hope that they'll get fair consideration, considering they've served, you know, the suspensions that they had, and they're back now. And everyone knows that both of them are outstanding managers. That's the thing. We know that certainly some things went wrong in Houston with everything that was going on, but no one was ever throughout any of that doubting whether they were good managers. So the fact that we're seeing that happen again for AJ Hinch with a team that, as we're talking about, had zero expectations, and Alex Cora with a team he was coming back to that no one was expecting to do well, hopefully that reminds everybody just how good of managers that they are.
30 seconds on this question. One of the players mentioned in the trade market is Jonathan Scope of the Tigers. The Tigers have to answer the question. Does he have more value as a trade asset? He's a rent, 1 year rental. He's a free agent year's end. Or is he more valuable keeping him on the team and riding out this wave of success, resetting culture, resetting expectations within that team? What's your gut?
I think it's probably the latter. I mean, they've been so much fun to watch. Just if you watch that team, they're having so much fun, and he really seems to be a big part of that. I think there's a lot of value in holding on to that.
All right, self-promote. You and Tim got to learn about self-promotion, having these big moments the last week, and we have to run you down on them. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Len Casper is the radio voice of the White Sox. You've heard him on the podcast many times in the past when he was doing television for the Cubs. Len, how you doing today?
Hey, Buster. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to going to Milwaukee this weekend. We've got the White Sox and the Brewers on Sunday Night Baseball. I almost said Bucks right there because they've been top of mind. So tell me, I'm curious, you know, the White Sox this year, obviously it's been a terrific season. They're in first place. What do you think that that we in the national media have not talked about enough when we talk about the White Sox?
Wow, that's a good question, Buster. It's been a fascinating year, to say the least. You know, obviously the big narrative is all of the injuries. At one point, basically the entire outfield plus even the backups, right? The top five outfielders were all on the injured list at the same time. Obviously, Adam Eaton is no longer here. Adam Engel is back, but Jimenez and Robert are kind of the two big names in terms of guys who will be returning at some point. So they've been able to overcome that. And not only, you know, former high draft picks like Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets and Jake Berger have pitched in, but also guys who were released by other organizations and kind of under the radar signings, right? Jake Lamb, Billy Hamilton, Brian Goodwin. But I think, you know, it's interesting. The story going into the season was all about Tony La Russa, and that has kind of faded away. But I might say that the way Tony has handled this job and this group and all these injuries, he's, in my opinion, had a pretty big positive impact on this team. You know, there's a lot of talk about him being unfamiliar, you know, with the club. He had not managed in 9 years. We're now, you know, we're almost 100 games into the season. I think he knows this group pretty well. And, you know, for all the issues kind of on the negative side early in the season, Buster, I think it's a tight-knit group, and I think Tony deserves a lot of credit for that and for the fact that they're kind of running away with this division right now. I think he's been a really good fit here.
And I know, you know, it's a different type of year because we're not in the clubhouses in the way that we've been in the past. How do you think he's done that? You know, part of my guess going into the year, I thought there was a chance this would work in part because, you know, I just think that, you know, the two leaders in the clubhouse among the position players are really good people, which I thought, you know, gave this a you know, help for Tony to make this work. With Jose Abreu and Tim Anderson, but you see it on a daily basis. How do you think he's done that?
Well, you nailed it. I think Tony identified the two guys that kind of make this clubhouse tick right off the bat, and that's Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu. And I think he reached out to those guys in spring training and said, "This is your clubhouse." And I am around the team quite a bit. I'm not in the clubhouse, but I am traveling with the club and have been since mid-May. And what I've noticed is it's the players' show in this regard. You know, they've done the dress-up theme trips. You know, guys want to play their music. That's fine. You know, Tony, I think, has adapted really well to this group. And it's fascinating because he has been out of the game for 9 years. But I was talking to him the other day, and I think this is something you probably know with talking to a lot of current managers and players. You know, we've gotten to the point with texting and with technology, guys kind of know the lineup, you know, 2, 3, 4 days in advance, and they get a big text or a Slack channel, whatever. Tony is adaptable on a daily basis. And the one thing I really like that he's done that a lot of current managers probably don't do as much as the old school guys is if a guy goes 4 for 4, he's probably going to be in the lineup the next day. And we can talk statistically about the hot hand and whether that really matters or not, but it seems to matter internally. You know, if Gavin Sheets hits a game-ending home run, he's probably going to play the next day. Billy Hamilton came off the bench, won the game the other night. Tony put him in the game the next day, and he had 2 hits. I think that does create kind of a fun competitive atmosphere in the clubhouse for a lot of these part-time players. They know, hey, if I have a good night, I might get 2 or 3 starts this week.
Tony's really interesting. I remember writing an article about 3 or 4 years ago, making the case that he is the greatest manager of all time. You know, he's second on that all-time win list now, having passed John McGraw. But the guy ahead of him really was under a different standard. Connie Mack owned the team, right? So it feels like it's a separate category. And that's not to take anything away from, you know, some of the great teams that Connie Mack had. But then I think about the way that bullpens are used, and you think about sort of the pitch-to-pitch intensity that has become, you know, I think more commonplace over the last 20 years. I think a lot of that started with Tony. And so, you know, there was that debate in spring training about what Tony was going to miss. And then you had the situation with Yermín Mercedes, and Tony caught some criticism for that, including from, you know, myself. But I almost feel like that this has obscured some of the great things about him as a manager.
Yeah, I think that's right. And look, I'm not as objective as others because I am around him every day. And full disclosure, we do a manager show on the radio. So I talk to him a lot. But selfishly, for me to be around someone who is, as you said, arguably the best manager of all time, I've learned a lot, not only about the way he thinks about the game, but a lot about, you know, his career. I've been around players and Tony, and, you know, kind of nudged Tony to tell some stories about his bonus baby rookie year of 1963. And guys, you know, get pretty excited to hear those tales. You're right. You know, he was kind of on the forefront of analytics, so to speak, in terms of bullpen usage and a lot of the things that he did when he was a young manager. And I think we're all guilty of saying, well, because he's 76 and because he hasn't managed in a while, that this isn't going to go well. He's as energized as I've seen anyone even close to his age. The other part for me, Buster, is that he's different. And I think we need to embrace that. It is an industry that, you know, it's kind of like an iceberg in that, let's go back to the Joe Maddon shifts in Tampa Bay, right? Everybody does that now. And over the course of time, you end up getting not necessarily cookie cutter managers, but I do think that with analytics and with a lot of things that have been proven successful, most teams are kind of doing the same thing. Most teams have a team president of baseball operations, and they have a general manager. Tony is old school, but he's just different. And I think we need to embrace different and unique. I'm having a blast following him. And I'll tell you a quick selfish note. The 3 oldest managers in baseball history, Connie Mack, Jack McKeon, and Tony La Russa, I've happened to spend a lot of time around 2 of those 3. Connie Mack is not one of those 3, but I feel lucky that I've gotten to know the other 2.
Yeah, and I'm curious about your perspective on this because you're talking to him on a daily basis, and it took me a while to figure this out about Tony. There were a couple times where he ripped me by name to reporters. Like I became, and I'm not going to go the details of it, but I became like a part of the story for a couple days, and it was a little unnerving. Like when it happened, but then, you know, the more that I was around Tony and I'd see him the next time and he would move on like nothing happened, I sort of realized that was him, just him sort of exercising his competitive juices on a given day. It was business. It wasn't personal. You know, I mean, you've heard the stories of people who go up to Tony in spring training games. I know you've heard these stories. Tony, how you doing? Well, no, in 9 innings. And that, you know, that can rub some people the wrong way, but you understand. That's him competing.
No doubt. And you know, sometimes it's said with a little bit of a wink as well. And look, I wasn't around him when he was 45 or 55. there's a soft side there. He's incredibly competitive and incredibly serious at a lot of moments. But I think when you get to talk to him a lot, you do realize that he's very aware of what's going on around him. And I don't think he's also – the other part is in this social media age, Buster, I don't think he's afraid to be criticized. And in some cases, what happens is he gets criticized and his players don't, and I think he likes that.
Yep, absolutely. All right, a couple things before you go. On Sunday Night Baseball, we've got Lance Lynn pitching against the Brewers. I suspect that, you know, from my day, I know from my days as a beat writer, there were certain pitchers you love to have on the mound. Lance Lynn is one of those. It's got to be a favorite day of work for you.
I get asked this question all the time. You know, who starts the first game of a postseason series for the White Sox, Rodon or Lynn? And it's a great question. I think you could flip a coin and go with either. But for my money, Lance Lynn is the guy I always want on the mound because he's unflappable. You kind of feel like there's a baseline performance you're going to get. I love how aggressive he is. There's a little John Lackey in there. And, you know, I was around John when he was a Cub, and he's one of my favorite guys all time. They don't put up with anybody's crap. You know, there's this look on the mound that they look ornery all the time. But again, you know, he's a generous guy off the field and his teammates love him. And I wasn't a bit surprised to see that he signed a contract extension because he's an absolutely perfect fit on the south side of Chicago.
And I love, I mean, get some insight into his self-awareness. He had that great quote to our friend Jim Hayes, who does games on Cardinals television back years ago. He said, you know, the more money I make, the better looking I get. There's so many layers to that that say a lot about Lance. As you know, Cubs fans know you well from all years with them. So I wanted to ask you sort of this existential question about Cubs fans and about, you know, within the context of this sell-off that the team is executing now of a lot of these guys who were part of that 2016 World Series. I grew up in New England surrounded by frustrated Red Sox fans. And, you know, I'd hear year after year their lament about the decades going without winning a World Series. They finally got that first championship after 86 years without one in 2004. And I jokingly say to my friends, hey, don't become Yankee fans. Don't do that where you expect to win every year. But that's exactly what happened. That 2016 championship, what's your sense of how that's affected Cubs fans?
Yeah, I think it's natural for any fan base. And again, full disclosure, I'm a Detroit Lions fan, and they haven't won anything.
I'm a Vikings fan. I didn't know that, Len. I'm a Vikings fan. You and I share the same fate.
Yep. So, you know, those fan bases are dying for one championship, right? And once it happens, I think there's a little innocence that's lost. And I get it. And you start to become very greedy. It's just kind of the natural course of events. And I do think there was a shift after the Cubs won the World Series. But I think the second part of it too, Buster, is not only that was it natural for that to happen, but there was a lot of talk here that the window was opening and it was going to be open for a long time. And, you know, they got back to the NLCS the year after, but after that, it has not gone particularly well, right? The wild card loss, not making the playoffs in 19, last year getting swept by the Marlins. So, you know, that frustration is palpable and I think it's understandable. And, you know, at the end of the day, you feel very, very fortunate that you won game seven and you got the ring and you broke the curse and all of that in 16. But I'd be lying if I told you I didn't expect the Cubs to not get back to the playoffs with Rizzo and Baez and Bryant and that core group. It has been very disappointing since, and I think Cubs fans certainly have the right to feel that way. It's going to be very weird to see any of those guys in a different team's uniform, but that's probably going to happen here soon.
I think, you know, baseball history, I think the absolute perfect comp for the 2016 Cubs are the 1986 Mets. You know, forget the off-field stuff about the 86 Mets. But, you know, this team that was amazing and beloved and everyone responded to that group and will, you know, they'll be brought back for first pitches and celebrated for years to come. But there'll always be that feeling around the team of, ah, boy, Do you get the, I mean, you know the players in the team. Do you think in 20, 25 years they'll be sitting on the back porch on the swings with their grandkids and having it sort of float through their mind? You know, why didn't we win more?
Yeah, sure. I do think that that's a very natural way to look at it. Having said that, that 16 season, which you chronicled a lot, and I was around you a ton, was pretty darn special. Yeah. And once you win one, they can never take it away from you. But yeah, I think the word dynasty started to get floated around, but it just tells you how difficult it is to not only just get there, but to win it and then sustain it. And it's still been arguably the best run in franchise history in terms of, you know, postseason appearances. But at the end of the day, everybody thinks about championships.
All right, Len, I will see you in Milwaukee this weekend. Thanks for doing this.
Can't wait. Thanks, Buster.
So recently, Tim Kirkjian and Eduardo Perez, Eduardo, who is going to join us on Sunday Night Baseball as Alex Rodriguez takes a week off, gave some thoughts about the Chicago White Sox. Give a listen.
Come October, I love the Chicago White Sox. Why? Because their great hitting has lasted throughout, even when Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert has not been there in that lineup. Then you combine it with great starting pitching. Four out of the five guys, over 100 strikeouts. Combine that as well with low ERAs from two of them. That's Lynn and Rodon. Look, this is a team that's built for October and a team that's built to last in October.
When October rolls around, I think the White Sox will be the team to beat in the American League. They lead the league in ERA. They have two number one starting pitchers this year in Lance Lynn and Carlos Rodon. They have a top-notch closer in Liam Hendricks. And after the Astros, they have the best offense in the American League, and they're going to get Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert off the injured list. I love where the White Sox are now. I'm going to like them even more in October.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. First up, we have our friend Reggie Deal at Baseball Deal RE. Reggie writes, and Buster, why is Oakland so focused on Vegas? This feels like the misplaced focus Major League Baseball had with Florida. Vegas does not have deep local historic roots like Portland, Vancouver, or Montreal. Also, went on a fourth city, changed the team name. It's now a white elephant. What do you think about Reggie's take?
Yeah, Reggie, I kind of like that. I mean, I think they got to stick with A's no matter where they are. You know, I mean, that's a longstanding franchise. The Athletics, they have all the history with the, you know, the colors that they have. I don't know exactly why they're so locked in on Las Vegas. Maybe because the Vegas folks are really focused on them. I'm assuming Major League Baseball likes this idea for a couple reasons. One, they wanted to have a team in the Mountain Time Zone for a while. And so that would check that box. And on top of that, if a team moves to Vegas, it doesn't really infringe on anybody else's territory. And it also keeps open potentially cities like Portland and Nashville, Charlotte, for whenever they decide that they are going to have expansion teams. I think it's it's interesting because just having lived in Nashville for a long time, seeing its growth, I think it's a great candidate for a major league team. But it feels like from Major League Baseball's perspective, you want to keep that market open until you can sell the rights and get like, you know, a $1.5 billion for an expansion fee.
That makes sense. Let's go to David, hastily assembled Precht at David Precht. David writes in, have players' decisions to get vaccinated or not caused issues or fracturing in any clubhouses? Don't need to get specific, obviously. Is that going on?
I think, yeah, my guess is that it has. I know that there have been people who've been greatly annoyed by players who are not getting vaccinated. You know, those, some who choose because they feel like that those are selfish decisions. But, you know, I think in the public casting of this, of course, what you hear from everybody is, well, it's an individual choice. Behind the scenes, especially with what we've had with a couple of outbreaks, hearing more and more from team level, folks at the team level will feel like, you know what, in 2022, maybe we should have a situation where players in the minor leagues, if you want to participate, you need to get vaccinated. They don't like having seasons derailed by, you know, players who choose not to get vaccinated, and that winds up leading to an outbreak.
It's big business. Don't want to stop that train. Let's go to Joey Votto is my spirit animal at Chris Brock 57. Chris Brock writes in, can you give some love to Jonathan India? The Reds rookie has a .406 on base percentage while playing an excellent defense at second and leading all rookie position players in Fangraphs WAR. The man should be in contention with Trevor Rogers for NL Rookie of the Year.
He is so much fun to watch. He's a terrific player. He has a great sense of the strike zone. He's hitting .275. But you mentioned the on-base percentage over .406. He reminds me a lot of Chase Utley, you know, the longtime all-star for the Philadelphia Phillies. When you watch him play and his style, I think right now Trevor Rogers probably would win the voting for the National League Rookie of the Year. 19 starts, 2.37 ERA. He was the Marlins representative at the All-Star game last week. But, and I don't know for sure, I got to believe that the Marlins at some point are going to start to pull back the reins on his innings. He's got 106 so far. And so if he shut down, let's say, for the last weeks of the regular season at age 23, then I think Jonathan India, in the end, will wind up surpassing him and wind up winning National League Rookie of the Year. He's a great player.
All righty. There's your love, Chris. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks again to Nathan Garcia for filling in for the last 2 days. Really appreciate that.
Yep, absolutely. And it is hard for me as a Vanderbilt guy to give love to Jonathan India, who is a Florida guy, University of Florida guy. That's tough, but it tells you how good he is. That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Len, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.